I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. We've already had our Thanksgiving here in Canada, while our friends in the United States celebrate their version next week. And, of course, Christmas is sooner than we think. If you've thought of cooking for that special event, or if you have guests over and you're a little apprehensive, there's a new book that'll give you great ideas on what to make, whether it's that big holiday meal or something special for Mother's Day, or some New Year's brunch. This book will have that and something for everything in between. Eric Akis has written five of these Everyone Can Cook recipe books. This one's Everyone Can Cook for Celebration, Seasonal Recipes for Festive Occasions, and it's published by Whitecap. Eric Akis is a food writer for the Victoria Times Colonist and a food consultant. He's a former chef as well. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Eric Akis. Good morning, Mr. Akis.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Nice to be on.
These books have been quite popular, haven't they?
My whole mission as a cookbook author is to create books that people will actually use. So I've had quite a good response from people saying that their copies are totally trash because they've used it so much.
Yeah, and what I love about it is just the setup and that it's easy to read and all that. But the recipes, I don't know, was that a deliberate attempt on your part? You made them simple enough, I guess?
My goal was to do recipes for all levels of cooks, so for novices and for people who have been cooking for some time. An example of that is in the new book, I've got a roast leg of lamb with a mint pesto crust. Now, if you're a novice, you might look at that and go, oh my gosh, I've never cooked a leg of lamb before. But beside the recipe is a complete step-by-step guide on how to tell when it's done, how to carve it. So I give that reassuring information that way. And then if you're someone who's been cooking for a while, you see that recipe and you go, oh my gosh, that sounds interesting, and I'll give that a try. So that's how I kind of combine things.
And you've made everything in the book, I gather.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You'd like to be my neighbor.
Oh, really? Would you, yeah.
It's a nonstop testing. Yeah, I do, you know, 7 or 8 recipes a week just through my work at the paper and through consulting.
Now, how do you make sure that a recipe that you're putting in a book or you're writing in your column isn't someone like someone else's in another book?
Well, I tend to do things this way. Say I want to do a recipe with chicken breast. I don't actually go and consult other books. I'll say, okay, I want to do chicken breast. Oh, chanterelle mushrooms are in season. Maybe I do a chanterelle mushroom sauce to go with it. And I'll kind of build it ingredient by ingredient. And, you know, there's a standard method. Say it's grilled chicken breast. It's still going to be the same cooking time no matter what the recipe is. It'll be 4 to 5 minutes per side or whatever. Or if it's pan-seared, it might be 3 to 4 minutes per side. So there's basic steps in a recipe that are always going to be the same. It's just how you switch up the different ingredients and tastes that you're trying to create.
And then the photographs in the book, do you work with a photographer? In terms of, like, do you make the food that he's photographed, or how does that work?
I'm also a food stylist, so in all the images in the book, I do the design. I do a little drawing of what it's going to look like, and then I do the food styling, meaning I do all the preparation. And with the photos, the idea is to make the food exactly like it's going to be when you make it yourself at home. So that's what people tell me that they really like about it. I made the recipe, and it looked exactly like it did in the book. So I'm not dressing things up to try and, you know, give them a better look than what you're actually going to get at home.
Now, this apprehension that people have over cooking and getting over that, was that something you had to do early on?
No, you know what? I was blessed to have a passion for cooking when I was very young, and I had a lot of mentors along the way that just really encouraged me and instilled some confidence at a very early age. So, but I do find that a lot of people are hesitant to cook because they're scared they're going to make mistakes. And I have an interesting story. I had an email from a reader who was a man who's 70, and his wife developed Alzheimer's, and he had never cooked a day in his life. So he bought my first book and said, you know, I didn't know what was going on. And he just did a great job. He said, I have so much more confidence now having some recipes that work, and I have confidence in doing them.
Do you find that the people that buy the books, is it male or female? Does it break down evenly, perhaps?
I get a lot of notes from males, which is encouraging.
Yeah.
If I think about, you know, when I was growing up, my mom was the one who did all the cooking. My dad didn't step a foot in there. So things are changing for sure.
You mentioned the screwing things up and the fear that we have of doing that. I've never made a turkey in my life. And one of the reasons is because I'm afraid that, well, one, it's a big piece of meat. And it takes a long time to cook. And if I've invested that time and I screw it up, I'm afraid that it won't be edible and I've wasted it. Is that a called for fear?
You know why? I dedicated 3 pages to a guide to preparing roast turkey in the book.
Yeah.
I do hear that quite a bit. But if you think about it, roasting a turkey is putting it in the pan, tying the legs, seasoning it as you wish. You could stuff it, or you could cook the stuffing on the side, that would be easier, and throwing in the oven until it's done. If you have your good old instant meat thermometer and insert it deep into the thigh and it registers 170, the turkey's done. It's not really rocket science if you just kind of, you know, go with it, go for it.
And the stuffing, do you put that inside or do you make that separately, as you said?
In the book, I give the option. You could put it in the turkey. But whenever you're stuffing a turkey, you want to put the stuffing in at the last minute. You don't want it sitting in there and, you know, having a chance to develop any bacteria. And you never want to tightly pack it in. You want to keep it loosely packed in the cavity. That way heat can penetrate as it cooks. Or the other option is to butter up a casserole and put the stuffing into there and bake it separately. So I give both options in the book. I like it inside the bird because it just seems to develop a nicer flavor.
Yeah. Now, I'm looking at the book here in the charts that you have for the times in terms of how much the bird weighs and how long it should be in the oven. Of course, these times vary. Does it matter if you've got a gas oven, say, or an electric oven?
The only real difference is if you're using convection heat. Convection heat is where there's a fan that circulates the heat around the oven and things cook a lot quicker.
Right.
Approximately 25% quicker, so your turkey will be done sooner. That would be the only difference. And another thing that people don't realize with turkeys is they're not all the same shape. Say you bought a free-range bird, you might note that the legs are a bit thinner because they're out and about walking, so they tend to cook quicker. That's why in the book I suggest that you check for the temperature about an hour before the suggested doneness time, just to see how it's progressing.
What did you have for Thanksgiving?
We're blessed to have some good friends on Salt Spring Island who, they bought a free-range bird from a farmer there, and they've got a wood-burning oven outside.
Right.
So they loaded up the oven and put the turkey in a roasting pan and threw it in there, and it was just awesome. Had a kind of a smoky taste.
Yeah. Have you ever had these deep-fried birds?
I did it once for a television show, and it was kind of funny because it was pouring rain that day, so we had to find a place that was covered, obviously, because you can't really deep fry it indoors,
yeah.
So we were at a garage, and we deep fried it in peanut oil, and I injected it with kind of a marinade, kind of a southern-style marinade, quite spicy, and deep fried it, and it was quite delicious, actually.
Yeah. For Christmas, what are your plans for the big meal at Christmas?
That's a good question.
Do you usually make the meal?
Well, I have a good friend who publishes Eat magazine in Vancouver Island.
Right.
And his wife comes over, and he brings appetizers and the side dishes, and we will do the main course and the potatoes or other starch and the sauce and the dessert. So it's a real nice team effort. That's what we usually do. Last year we went for a prime rib or something different. And so I bought a 7-rib prime rib, a giant beauty. And that was quite elegant. This year I think we might switch back to turkey. We're kind of traditional when it comes to Christmas and Thanksgiving. And then tend to switch things up at Easter and that kind of thing.
Yeah. This great apprehension, overcooking, back to that. It's hard enough to cook for yourself or cook for your family, but when you have to cook for guests, I think the fear is heightened. You can take the book and you can actually make a sort of menu. You've got menus in the back, don't you?
I selected the recipes with the idea that at the end of each chapter they would work together in menus. So people can say, okay, I feel like having Cornish hen for Christmas. Well, then here's three side dishes that would go with that, and that's at the end of each chapter.
And in terms of the ingredients, I mean, when you look at the recipes, the ingredients, they're not very many ingredients, but I suppose that's something that scares a lot of people if it's complicated, right?
Yeah.
And you make the effort to not make it complicated, I guess.
For most recipes, I try to make them fit onto one page.
Yeah.
It's easier to read.
Right.
One of my favorite styles of cooking is Mediterranean-style cooking. And, you know, where the whole philosophy is keep it simple, stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So have a nice main ingredient, nice piece of fish, a little bit of olive oil, some nice herbs. Sometimes the more you put in the pot, the worse the recipe turns out. So I really like to keep things pretty straightforward, but as you can see by the photos in the book, really colorful and beautiful. And, another thing that I wanted to make sure was that you could actually find the ingredients. So all the ingredients in the books are ones that you can find at most mainstream supermarkets.
And the time involved, most of the recipes, they're not very long, are they? I mean, other than the turkey and the sort.
No, they're pretty quick cooking, and also similar with the preparation time. I tried to keep it under 30 minutes for most recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're a former pastry chef. Do you enjoy making pastries more than, say, other parts of the meal?
No. I went to chef school first, and then got my chef's apprenticeship and worked in hotels. And when I was living in Toronto at the time, George Brown College offered a nighttime course to get your pâtissier, your pastry chef training. So I wanted to do that so I could round out my skills. So I like doing it all, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is there a favorite place in Vancouver that you like to go to when you're here?
I kind of like French food, so my wife and I quite often go to Café de Paris on Denman Street.
Right.
Yeah. It's kind of a classic place. I don't get over here often enough, actually.
Yeah. When you're in Victoria, do you eat out a lot?
We do. We like places such as Café Brio, Brasserie Le Col, the Bengal Lounge at the Empress Hotel is really fun for their curry buffet. And there's a lot of great ethnic restaurants in Victoria.
The other thing that I enjoyed in the book was that you have you can have like a buffet of sandwiches or hamburgers. Do you find that a lot of people are doing things like that now? Sandwiches, obviously, they've done that for years, but burgers, especially.
Yeah. I tried to throw in some more formal ideas, like for Christmas and Thanksgiving, but in the summertime, I did a burger buffet, and it's kind of fun. You make up some nice burger patties, you put them on the barbecue, and then you just set out a range of toppings, buffet style, and people can just build their own burger. It's just kind of a fun way to do it, and you can put them out in an attractive bowl and a platter and make it look really sharp.
Are there other cookbooks that you use, like other authors and the sort?
You know, I'm developing recipes all the time that I actually don't use a lot of books. The one I probably look to the most is probably the most classic out there. It's The Joy of Cooking.
Right.
Yeah. And this season, I'm really impressed with Michael Smith's new book.
Right.
Yeah, that one's looking... He's got some really good ideas and sort of a similar philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when you're developing recipes, I mean, you're obviously making considerations for time and ingredients and the sort. Nutrition, that plays a big part, does it?
It does, because I get a lot of notes from readers saying they're really concerned about that. You
uh-huh.
know, how much oil's in the recipe? Did you really need to use that much butter? Could you maybe use brown rice? Those kind of questions. So, you'll see that in the book I've put that into consideration. For example, I have a brown rice salad for a summer menu idea. And there's lots of legumes being used in hummus and those sort of recipes.
And then there's this great trend that we're seeing across the country about eating locally. Is there a great demand, say, for local ingredients?
In Victoria there sure is. The farmers markets there has just exploded the last few years. There's just people are really wanting to buy local. I go to Moss Street Market in Victoria, and you would not believe it on a summer Saturday. It's just totally crazy.
Mm-hmm. I read somewhere that you're a big fan of cast iron pans.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you know? Like, I mean, we have one at the house, and
yeah.
I guess it's sort of rusted out. I mean, can you still use that, or what do you have to do?
You need to get some steel wool and give it a good scrub and get all that rust out, and then you need to re-season it with some vegetable oil. And to do that is you just coat it lightly with vegetable oil and then cook it in the oven for about 30 minutes or so. It'll come back to life for sure. The thing with cast iron is you have to regularly use it to keep it having that nonstick kind of surface.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a pan that weighs about 50 pounds that my grandmother had, and I use it for absolutely everything, from cooking hamburger steaks on the stove to roasting, you know, a big chicken in the oven. So it's really quite durable.
Eric, this is such a great book, as I said. Congratulations on it. Continue. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
The book is called Everyone Can Cook for Celebration, Seasonal Recipes for Festive Occasions. It's published by Whitecap Books. You can read Eric's column in the Victoria Times Colonist. The author, Eric Akis, on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.